Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
And welcome to the season of Hallows or Samhain or Halloween or whatever it is that you choose to call it, because this is the holiday issue, the holiday episode. We're excited. It's the witching season, and we've got lots of stuff to talk about.
This is definitely one of my favorite times of year. It's just so much fun.
Absolutely. And the irony there is that the themes are all so dark. But I think that's part of the fun of it.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we'd certainly over the past month have been talking about some pretty intense and at some point somber topics.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I noticed that the download rate on the death issue is down a little bit. I think some just like, nah, I can't deal. Maybe not this year. I've got enough to contend with this year. Maybe I don't need to listen to 45 minutes about death.
Yeah, I understand.
I do too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So why don't we start with the very simplest thing? What do we call this thing?
I wish it was that simple. You know, I don't have a great name for it. This season is second autumn for us, and I've just often fallen back on Halloween or Samhain, but I've heard you call it Hallows a lot, and I have been, it's been growing on me, that particular name for it.
Ah, okay. Well, Samhain is it's the Irish word for November. The arrival of November is the beginning of Samhain. I don't use the Celtic names in naming my holidays because I don't particularly relate to that ancestry at all. It isn't my ancestry. I'm living in a radically different climate than Irish or Welsh or Scottish people do and did. So I just have other names for things, and Hallows is the name that I have for this season, because it sounds solemn and serious, but it's also close enough to Halloween that people will understand what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, any of those names are interchangeably fine by me, and I think that it's just a matter of taste. Of what people choose.
Well, the Celtic element, so I very strongly identify with my Celtic heritage, but I don't speak Irish. I don't speak any of the, so I speak Welsh, and there's a couple of words in Irish that I can pick out and grammatically similar, but I can't read it for sure. The writing system is very different. So those are names that kind of trickle in, but I also only am using them because that's what people talk about them with. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This arrives, gives us a perfect opportunity for a tangent, mm-hmm. is that one of the things that I think modern paganism kind of got stuck with because of Gerald Gardner was the creation of the Wheel of the Year in the context of sort of the British Isles.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the seasonal passages are kind of keyed to events that happen in those climates. The names of the holidays are taken from various, you know, early British Isles names. So in some cases, they're just made up, just plain old made up.
Yeah, and they're just kind of grabbed from different, you know, we talk about Celtic as being the same. It is an umbrella, but there's a lot of cultures underneath that are different groups. And,
sure,
it's, you like, know, we're grabbing Mabon and Samhain, and, you know, those aren't even the same language. So,
exactly. So one of the things that I feel it's really important for my practice, and I know that this has resonated for a number of other people, is to root my practice and my celebration of the year in the actual seasons and ecological happenings of where I live. Mm-hmm. So it's a truly earth-based practice. It's not a theoretical earth-based practice. It's a truly grounded where I am, this land, this water, this air that I breathe kind of practice. And as I look around here in, you know, what was indigenous land and then was Spanish Mexican occupied land and then was English European occupied land, I don't see much of any remnant of any of those pieces that would have come from the British Isles centuries ago. Mm-hmm. So I just choose to name my holidays in other ways than that. But many of the themes are the same because, especially at this time of year, nature is folding up shop in many ways, and it's the time to acknowledge that things end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We said goodbye. It's my 4-year-old and I. We had an orb spider who got huge. I'm talking about like ping pong ball huge, who'd been living in our window, and we'd go out and say hi to her. And this is quite late in the year for us, but we had our hard frost, and we went out and of course, the spider, even though it lived in the window, it froze. And so we were saying goodbye to the spider and talking about how, nope, that spider's not coming back. Mm-hmm. It had an egg sac with lots of hundreds of tiny little spiders who will probably come back next year. But that's a new generation.
Right.
That our, Miss Spider she's gone, and it's very appropriate, the leaves falling around in front and the crispness in the air. And
yes, the thing that we tend to do in sort of a poetic sense, but also in a very literal sense, is to conflate dormancy with death. Mm-hmm. We have all these trees that go dormant. They throw down all their leaves because they would just be destroyed by frost anyway. And they pull their vascular systems in. Mm-hmm. And they hold on to get through the winter months. And then when the conditions are good again, they re-emerge and hang out their solar collectors to go through another cycle. So that's not death and rebirth. It's going to sleep and waking up. It's not quite mm-hmm. the same thing. And in the pagan community, we talk a lot about the cycle of death and rebirth. And I have a bone to pick with that. Things that are dead are dead. They aren't born again. New generations are born and those persist, so the species can continue. But those individuals, that one individual spider, she's not coming back. She's had her time and that was it.
Yep.
So when I think about this time of year, I think of this as the end of the arc of the year rather than of a station on the wheel of the year, because the next time, the coming time, symbolically for me, after Hallows and leading all the way up to the winter solstice, is compost time. Mm-hmm. It's the time of disassembly of the dead things that are no longer alive, and then the reconfiguration of those into new things, which can then be born with the returning sun at the winter solstice. Mm-hmm. So it's an arc. It's like a wheel that's kind of missing a few spokes there. But it's the most important part because it assembles all the rest of the spokes in its way.
Yeah. So the compost for us was last holiday, where we do celebrate the compost and the microbes and everybody doing that delicious decay and all of that. But this holiday is the dead, the truly gone, the ancestors, those who came before, and we talked about ancestors last week, actually, those who came before that are no longer here, and they won't ever be again, they're gone, but they still they fed into the life that now is.
Yes.
And allows for that continuation of the wheel of the whole system. The individual, that line's flat, but the system itself, that will come back in the spring after, for my climate, after the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So
we have some rest here too. We do have some deciduous trees, although the vast majority of our rain happens in the winter. And so what happens here is that everything turns green in the winter. It turns brown in the summer. Very, very different than where you are. But still, all the deciduous trees will drop all their leaves right around now. And they won't wake up again until the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a time to consider death, to consider the ending of things, and to remember that which has gone before, as we've been talking about in our last couple of episodes. In historical times, this would be the flesh harvest, the third of the harvest festivals, where you would harvest the meat to reduce down your livestock herd so that you had enough food to feed them through the winter, because you couldn't afford to keep them all alive. Mm-hmm. And so it was a time of feasting, obviously, because suddenly there was a lot of meat around, and also doing all the things that we do to preserve meat, like salting and smoking and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so cooking is really associated with this season as well, whether it's pumpkin pies or those rich kind of root stews that we have in the autumn. It's a time for piling in some calories before things get really lean going into the winter months.
Yeah. And it's a celebration.
Yes.
That's the part that's fun, I think, is, well, also kind of the mischievous kind of spooky part there too, but there is a celebration. There's the candles and the pumpkins and the food and most years the coming together that happens with this final harvest season as we prepare to fully enter into that dark part of the year. Because after this point, we're there.
Yes, especially in places that have daylight savings time. Because on the night of Halloween at 2:00 in the morning, we're going to set the clocks back, and all of a sudden it's going to be real dark at night.
Yep.
It's always been kind of amazing to me that the way that timing works, winter falls like a shutter. It's not a gradual process at all. It's like, oh my goodness, it's dark at 5:00. How about that? So yeah, it is a celebratory time. It's a time when we put on faces of others and we pretend to be other things. And when we make light of death in the form of ghosts and ghouls and spooks and skeletons and monsters and the scariest things of all, which are those that have violated the rule of death, like mm-hmm. vampires and ghosts and animated skeletons and Frankenstein's monsters, all those, anything that has broken that rule is really frightening to us. And with good reason, because it's the rule. It's really the law.
Yeah.
So what are some of the themes that we think about when we talk about this season? We've been talking about some of them, but what are some more?
Well, it really is that kind of final celebration, at least for us, of the autumn. And that's something that we're always bringing in. I think I've mentioned to all of you before, I like to use a diffuser in the house mm-hmm. and put, you know, different smells throughout the year, and it slowly transitions. And now we're in full on spicy cloves and cinnamon. And I mean, my house just smells like a chai and pumpkin pie all the time right now.
Nice.
And leaves and pumpkin, lots of pumpkins. My pumpkins are just fantastic. And all of that, that harvest stuff is in the home now. We also here, we have chamisas. I think some areas call them rabbit bush, but they're this beautiful sort of sage green with this time of year, these bright yellow, tiny little flowers that for some people cause horrible allergies. But if they don't cause you terrible allergies, they're just, it's just beautiful and smell incredible. And so we've got a bunch of those hanging in the house. And it's this mix between outdoor, indoor, fun, playfulness this time of year. And it's chilly in the night. Still sometimes warm enough in the day that you can be comfortable outside in a t-shirt, but then you have that nice, you want the fire going at the night and bringing out the blankets, the heavier blankets on the bed, and the cat finally comes back to cuddle because it's getting chilly enough that, you know, he actually will dare to be around you, these mere humans. So
that sounds wonderful. And there are some commonalities with how things are for us here. It's chilly in the late night and in the morning. Not chilly enough to light a fire, really. But when your house gets down in the low 50s, I mean, that's cold enough to feel like you're definitely not in summer anymore. Low 50s, high 40s. The smell of the season just arrived today. It's a combination of oak leaves, the sort of sweet smell of oak leaves, and a little bit of smoke on the air. And just very, very redolent of the season. And I could really tell that we're definitely there now. Haven't gotten our pumpkins yet. We don't grow them, so we have to go get them. But we're definitely going to, and we're going to do some decorating around here. We talked about doing it today and probably will after we're done recording the podcast. So, yeah, there's all that sort of fun, playful, spooky, you know, watching ghost story movies and witchy sorts of movies. We watched Practical Magic, last night, and, I mean, it's very Hollywood and it's not very realistic, but it's got enough that's realistic about it to still be very charming and feel like you can sort of recognize yourself in the practices of that family. So yeah, all those things going on. And for me, what persists about this season is that I actually carry it through from Halloween through to about the 7th of November, which is around the actual midpoint between the solstice and the equinox. Ordinarily, my ritual circle has had its Samhain gathering on the first weekend of November, but because Halloween falls on a Saturday this year, we're doing it on that Saturday. So it kind of stretches it out a little bit, and it might be a little odd when everybody else has taken all their stuff down to still have our stuff up. But I like this season a lot, and I don't want it to just go away in the space of a week. So
yeah, we do similar. The holidays are more of the midpoint of the season for us, although this is one that ends a little bit faster. And just because of what's happening with our, once it decides that it's cold here, right? It's just kind of, okay, it's shifted. So, yeah. And you brought up something that I think is important in there, is that the days that we celebrate these holidays are not always matching with their actual astronomical date, right? It's not actually the midpoint, you know, it's become tradition. And so we like it on November 1st or October 31st or, you know, May 1st or whatever it is for the part of the year you're in.
Right. And that is kind of an odd thing. I mean, I think it has something to do with the switchover from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar, because there were a whole bunch of days that were pulled out and the whole calendar got kind of ganked in the 16th century when that happened. But however it is, it was decided at some point that those holidays should be set days of the calendar rather than calculations between astronomical events. And so we're kind of stuck with it. I don't know how Imbolc or Brigid what's the other word? Brigid or Imbolc? Candlemass.
Yeah.
I don't know how that one ended up on the second. All the rest of the holidays ended up on the first, basically. I don't know how that one ended up on the 2nd of February, but that's Groundhog Day. That's the one that people tend
I've seen it listed for the first as well. Oh. I've heard explanations about whether you start a day at sunrise or at sunset, but it's not something I've actually done a huge amount of research into.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we can figure that out by the time we go back around the circle and
we'll get there. Yeah.
Have our episode for that, which we haven't done yet because we haven't been going for a year yet.
Didn't we start? Isn't that where we started?
I thought
we have to go look back at it, but yeah.
Started right after.
Maybe.
Imbolc.
Well, we'll take a look afterwards, but let's come back to now though. Because there is a component that we've mentioned, but there's also Halloween in terms of what's happening with the larger culture's celebration of Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, in our household as well, we're doing the Halloween because we've got little folks mm-hmm. who think that it is lots of fun and want to dress up and all of that. And this year it's going to be a little bit different because we're not really thinking that going to from stranger to stranger's house and having that contact is really a great call. And even if it is one of the more safer environments because it would be mostly outdoors and all of that, I think that there's just not going to be as many people doing it this year.
Yes.
So what we are doing for the kids instead is we are doing kind of like an Easter egg hunt. They are getting dressed up and we have gotten candies and little fun coloring books and treats. And we're going to do an outdoor evening time, kind of like dusk time hunt for them to go and find the stuff with little you know, we've got some little candles and things like that that we're setting up as well to make it a kind of fun little environment.
That's wonderful. That's really a great idea. Yeah, I think it's tricky this year to try to have as many of these traditions as we can while remaining safe.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about our ritual traditions, I think obviously those are being changed up a lot this year. And I so understand the pull of wanting to get together with your ritual compatriots,
mm-hmm.
But please don't. Unless you live with them, please don't. COVID is spiking again. The colder winter months are going to be more conducive, and this disease is really out of control in the United States anyway right now. If you're in New Zealand, knock yourself out.
Or don't, so that you guys stay good.
But here in the U.S., this is a very serious issue, and we need to be really concerned about it.
Yeah. So, and that's one of the things that for us, celebrating the one of the things that we've loved in the past is doing a get together feast kind of dinner party with friends for the holidays, not necessarily with any sort of ritual, because it would be something that we would include non-pagan friends in as well, and it was usually a very sort of non-threatening, depending on people's different levels of openness, but the folks that we'd be inviting, a very non-threatening kind of inclusive way is, hey, it's the solstice. It's, you know, it's Halloween. Let's get together and do some good food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the other thing that we have done every year is we'll do some sort of horror RPG game.
Nice.
So one of our favorites is Dread, that you use a Jenga tower with, and you pull each time your character does something. Your characters are meant to die because it's horror, but each time they do something dangerous, you have to pull from the tower. And when the tower collapses, then your character is out of the game or something terrible happens. So just kind of enjoying that spooky, scary part of it.
Fun. That's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a period where Nemea and I used to do a lot of theme parties, various costume theme parties on all different kinds of themes. And for 3 years in a row, I did a zombie crawl that was a zombie wassail. So we all dressed up as zombies and shambled around the downtown of the little town where we lived, going into businesses and singing a zombie song and then demanding brains.
That's wonderful.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Very fun. But 3 years of that was enough, and it didn't take off. There were only like 6 or 8 of us every time we did it. And so we stopped, but that was really a fun thing to do at Halloween.
Mm.
So why don't we talk about some of our individual traditions that we do at this time of year in the way of rituals and observances, and also how those are going to change this year because of the pandemic.
Yeah. We've been touching on it a little bit, but is there anything that you do on the actual night of, or is it sort of a more of the season for you?
On the night of, typically not, other than to, you know, put a candle in the window and some other, you know, traditional sorts of things. But on the day of Halloween, for many years now, God, it's got to be close to 20 years, I have taken a walk in a favorite old cemetery during the afternoon, kind of getting on towards dusk. And I go and I visit my favorite monuments, and I go to where a friend of mine is buried in a natural burial section of the cemetery. And I bring my ritual knife with me, and I gather a small sprig from the yew tree. There are several very large yew trees in the cemetery. Yew trees are very popular in cemeteries because they're evergreen, and they symbolized survival, you know, eternal survival throughout, you know, beyond death. Mm-hmm. So all over Europe, you'll see cemeteries that have yew trees in them. So I bring home this this sprig of yew tree, and I put it on my underworld focus altar, and I let it dry for a year. And then I use the dry one from last year to light the Hallows fire in my circle's Samhain celebration. So it's a way to kind of bring the cemetery in and all of those historical references about you, and to have it be an actual ritual tool for the purpose of getting the fire going when we start the fire, which is late into our ritual. We do a bunch of stuff before we light the fire.
Mm.
How about you? I mean, I would imagine that most years you're occupied with trick-or-treating.
That's what it's been the last few years. So my oldest is 4.5 now, so we've done a few years of trick-or-treating. But that's a big for us. And we have, you know, we've got to drive to somewhere where we can actually trick or treat. But in terms of the the celebrating it, will we do whatever night in the general vicinity would kind of work for people to do some sort of get together and a little dinner and just that celebration in the community aspect. And when we have done feasts like that, we often try and make it with as much of our own food as possible, which has always been nice. And this time of year, that's quite doable because there's a lot that is, especially with the winter squashes, as long as the squash bugs don't get them, they do very well here and they last, you know, you keep them for 6 months or so.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why we do winter squash. They keep just so incredibly well. But for me, at some point in this general time period, I try and take a moment to go out, in addition to my normal going out and spending time with the stars and the sun, but especially sometime sunset-ish. And I try and find somewhere to sit that I can hear the crinkling, crackling of the plants that have, the annual plants that have died from that year. And just to take some time to set up an actual circle for myself and appreciate all of the year that was, mm-hmm. and a moment of gratitude towards my mother and my grandmother and so on that have passed. And then also the garden, the annual garden that has passed, and the, you know, our bull and our cabritos for that year and all of that. And just take some time to be present in that gratitude and yet sorrow at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we even have a word to describe that emotion in English, but to be just to be present with that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be exactly on Hallows or Halloween or Samhain, but somewhere around that time, it just feels very appropriate.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. That absolutely is. Anything else?
That's what it's been now. And I suspect that in the coming years, our family's traditions will evolve as the kids get older. And then my son's birthday is just about a week later. So we were hoping he'd be our little Samhain baby, but they happen when they want to happen. so we kind of start to switch gears into that.
I see. Okay.
So, yeah.
What my circle does, I belong to a ritual circle that is really my family. They're my chosen family and the only family I have. And we get together about every 6 weeks because we live a distance from one another, from the most distant members are about an hour and a half's drive from one another. So
just perspective difference, that doesn't sound very distant to me.
Well, okay. yeah, I mean, if you live in the desert, then people can have an awful lot of space around them before you run into more people. But this is in the populated Bay Area, and so you're driving through, you know, 9 million people. To get to the house of the people that you want to stay with.
Hmm.
So every year since, this is our 30th Samhain. This will
Wow.
be our 30th Samhain. We started in 1991. And since about 1997, I want to say, when our friends built a house in the Santa Cruz Mountains, that's a straw bale, off the grid, solar powered house. with quite a bit of land around it, that's where we've gone to do our Hallows ritual. And the way that that works in broad strokes is that we gather, indoors, we do a sort of brief check-in about where everybody is. And then we process down to the fire circle, which in more recent years have sprouted chairs because we're a lot older now than we used to be. And that is the time when we sort of address what we're letting go of, what we're thankful for, what is ending, and any qualities that we want to invoke to be with us in the course of the ritual. The fire is laid but not set, but there is a focus there with jack-o'-lanterns and so forth. The candles aren't lit, but the jack-o'-lanterns are lit, so there is some light. And this is after dark. So then we proceed down a trail in silence to a very, very dark place that we've designated as the land of the dead. And we talk to our dead people, particularly the ones that have gone in the last year. But we talk to our dead animals and our dead people and any major public figures that we think of as meaningful in our lives that have died. And when we feel that that's complete, and before we start feeling too comfortable there, we process back and then light the fire with that yew branch that I talked about earlier. And we have wine and chocolate and laugh and socialize, and we come back to life. And then after all of that is done, we go inside and have a big feast. So that is, and we stay overnight, and so we, you know, get to visit with one another in the morning and all that kind of stuff. So it's a very nice kind of gathering every year. This year, we're not going to be able to do that. We've planned a ritual along the same broad strokes, but it'll be done over Zoom. And we'll see how that works. I'm just so sad that our 30th Samhain, which falls on Halloween, on a Saturday, on a blue moon, we can't actually get together, but them's the breaks.
Yeah.
So there are kinds of rituals that people can do at this time of year. I wrote about some of them in the blog that can be very powerful and transformative. People do burial rituals where they literally do a funeral for something they want over in their life that they want to be done with, bury symbols. They can do a sort of a funeral pyre of burning things that they want to be finished with, they want to be free of. We did a ritual for a member of our circle. This must be 15 years ago or so now, when she had had a dream about a person in her life who was on the way out of her life and was kind of clinging in a way that really didn't help. And the image that she had was of this grave with a hand extending out that was just sort of partially alive. So I literally made that for her. I dug up a bunch of dirt and, you know, got a Halloween store zombie hand and, you know, made this for her. And she didn't know that any of this was happening. And so we did preparations and invoked intentions and all that kind of stuff, and then walked down to where this was. And she burst into tears and went through a very powerful transformational experience holding this hand. And then buried it completely and, you know, and was done. And those are the kinds of things that I think we can do at this season. That it's so loaded with rich, somber, meaningful imagery that I think we can take advantage of that to do our personal work.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was really an amazing ritual. Very, very powerful. Mm. So the other thing that I do at this time of year, which is related but entirely different than what we've been talking about, is what I talked about two episodes ago in the death episode, which is the updating of my death packet. Mm-hmm. With advance directives and a will and a farewell letter and information, you know, passwords to social media and, you know, life insurance numbers and, you know, all the things that people will need to know, my preferences for what I'd like done with my remains, all those things, so that when people, if especially if you die suddenly, people have something to go on with how to process that, how to deal with the fact of your death. Mm-hmm. I also added a little section, which is how I would like to die, in terms of, you know, if I have an illness or something, well, I'd like to be at home and I'd like to have my witchy stuff around me and I would like to hear this kind of music and I like these kinds of scents and so forth. Doesn't mean that I'm going to get that, but at least I will have stated that that's what I wanted. And if people are in a position to help me to have any of that, then maybe they will.
You know, that sounds similar to something on the other end that people do, is a birth plan.
Yes.
It sounds a lot like, you know, and sometimes it doesn't work out, but that thinking about it and putting it down and having that request so that when you're most likely not in a position to be focusing on that, you're focusing on something real intense on the other side of it, then people have something to go off of.
Yes.
To do their best to help you in that, if that's what can happen.
Yes. That's exactly the idea. And in fact, there are people now who work as death doulas to kind of help to work with the family and kind of help people to go through the process of dying, mm-hmm. which I just think is a really interesting and lovely development. Yeah. I think that's some really rich and valuable work.
Yeah. Mm.
So do we want to talk more about how things are going to be different this year? I mean, you've already kind of explained what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's, you know, a lot of it's just the transitioning to having the connections with people where we can. And a lot of that ends up being with this Zoom stuff, mm-hmm. which actually I think that now that we're later on in the year and we both have had a lot more experience doing ritual and doing this kind of thing on Zoom, we might want to actually dedicate an episode to maybe talking about how we can do that.
That's a great idea. Yeah, sort of help with doing rituals online. I mean, people have been doing rituals online since before web. I mean, they were doing it, you know, just typing text about what their actions were on bulletin boards. So this has been happening for a long time, ever since the advent of the internet. But now we have video, we have screen sharing where we could show YouTube segments and incorporate those into the ritual. There's just all kinds of cool things that you can do. I know that for my circles ritual this year, there's a YouTube video of 1,000 candles, and it starts focused on one and kind of pulls back and then pans around and slowly reveals this enormous field of candles. So mm-hmm. it's 1,000 of them. I'm gonna turn off the sound because it's some sort of Christian something or other is the sound. Singing. Mm-hmm. I prefer for it to be in silence. And the reason that I'm going to incorporate that into the guided meditation part of our ritual this year is because 1,100 times that many people in the world have died from COVID. And I think that just, you know, seeing that number of candles and understanding them as individual beings, and then understanding that literally, you know, an exponential number more have gone because of this disease, I think will be very impactful.
Yeah. So for you, it sounds like there's going to be a lot. It's going to be in the online ritual. Have you done the other holidays this year with the group online, or is this the first?
This is the first. I've done my own individual celebrations for the holidays. This is our big
ritual. The big one for the year. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in March when we had the equinox, we were still sort of shell-shocked by being locked in. And then in May, I think, was still the same thing, kind of not being able to believe that we couldn't go anywhere or do anything. So there's, I participated in an autumnal equinox ritual with the Saturday morning Atheopagan Facebook group Mixer.
Mm-hmm.
Group. So, I mean, I've done a few of these, but with that particular circle, this is going to be the first one, and we've done a lot of planning around it, so hopefully it'll turn out well.
Yeah.
I'm sure it won't be what we planned it to be. They never are.
That's sort of a theme of rituals, I think, isn't it?
It is.
Or theme of any time there's, well, anytime humans are involved. I was going to say two or more, but I think even with just one person.
I think that's the big challenge in the aerospace industry, is that you can't have it not go the way you plan. if you're trying to go to space or fly at Mach 6, you definitely need everything to go exactly the way that you planned for it to go.
Yeah. Well, actually, it reminds me a little bit, jumping back to what else we're doing this year. One of the things we have been very, very intentional about with the kids, but I think that it's equally important with adults, is we've been very careful about our language, about not saying things like, Halloween's not going to be as fun this year, you know, and not seeding that, you know, not being untrue, that it's not pretending like there's nothing different this year, or that there aren't really big issues going on, and that there aren't grief and there isn't all of this stuff, but to be very aware in the way that we frame our discussions and behavior around it, so that, you know, it's not that the kids are missing out. We're doing this year, this is what we have, and we're going to do it this way, and this is going to be exciting. And maybe, you know, I think that one year someday we will go back to being able to do a more traditional trick-or-treating, and we will be able to go back to having our feasts and all of that. But I think that we'll carry a lot through from this year and these years around this with us that can really add and feed that in a good way.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And especially, I mean, there's a self-hypnosis aspect to all of this, but I think particularly with children, you know, parents can so frame what the expectations are on the part of children. But I know that all of us this year, all of, you know, adults have been, I mean, we've gotten in the habit of saying, well, there goes 2020 again, doing something terrible to us, because this has really been one hell of a year. That said, expecting the worst, it's not that it has a magical ability to make the worst happen, because I certainly don't believe that, but to some degree, what we experience is through the filter of our expectations. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the world and we're looking for what's wrong and what's bad and what's disastrous, that's what we're going to see. But if we open that filter a little bit more and we can see a more nuanced picture that includes also what's beautiful and powerful and transformative and amazing about what's going on, then we get a fuller picture, I think. I don't recommend the Pollyanna approach either, of only seeing what's good and wonderful.
Certainly not, yeah.
So not grounded. But being able to see both, I think, is really important.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that we're doing with the Wheel of the Year, when we are thinking about these, we're observing what's happening in our natural environment around us, but also we're including the meaning. We're searching for these particular themes and giving ourselves an opportunity to focus in on that and to choose the way that we're going to filter or frame our experience and understanding.
Yes, yes, for sure. There are many, many medieval and Renaissance paintings of various sacred figures, saints and other people contemplating a skull. It's a very common motif. And the reason for that is that sitting with our mortality is a really valuable thing to do. It illuminates our lives in so many ways. Now, what the painters of those paintings meant was, you've got to get right with God because the times are coming when you're going to die and then you'll be judged. I don't believe any of that stuff. But the fact is that we have a finite time here. And I love that this time of year comes around every year. And so we're able once again to sit with the fact of our mortality and, you know, the fact that, yes, we have a skull inside our heads. And that's what it looks like when you take all the stuff off it.
And that's what all of our skulls look like when you take it off.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
You can't tell. I mean, there's a few features in there that somebody really good at bones might be able to pick out. But for most of us, we look at a skull and pretty much looks the same.
We just see a skull. That's right. Yep. That's right. And so it's a great equalizer and a great humanizer of that process, I think. At least I know that it is for me. So my wish for our listeners then is happy Hallows, solemn Hallows, meaningful Hallows.
Grateful,
fun, spooky,
tasty,
all of those qualities that can go with the richness of this holiday. It is not a one-dimensional celebratory time. It has a lot of culture and a lot of meaning folded into it. And I hope that you are able to celebrate it in a way that really rings all that meaning out for you in a really pleasurable way.
And thanks for being here with us. Thank you for listening, and we really appreciate you.
Yes, we're so grateful for our listeners. And you can always reach us. We got email this week, which was great. We got a very nice email today, actually, from someone thanking us for the podcast and saying that a non-theist perspective on paganism is something that really resonates with them and that they appreciate that we're doing this. You can reach us at thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com, which is thewonderpodcast, all one word, qs@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone. Happy Halloween.